The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I saw this article from, I believe it's MSN News. I know, what was I doing there, right? It happens. And it says, men across America are getting vasectomies as an act of love. Man, doesn't that sound Christmassy? And in it, as I guess Andy Gress, he says, I wanted to man up. I can't, it's kind of hard to imagine him doing that like with like a manly voice. But it's like, I wanted to man up. And my take on that is, so your idea of manning up is by reworking your plumbing.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, you gotta love that, huh? Men getting vasectomies. Well, buckle up, guys, and this might be a squeamish conversation for you, but we're going to talk about the rise of it in our country. I saw something I didn't realize was on our calendar until just recently. The third Friday of November, you know what it's observed as? Yeah, World Vasectomy Day. I'm like, really? We had to put that on the calendar? I don't know how that got put on, but you can mark your calendar, third Friday of November. You know, that's World Vasectomy Day. Is the third Thursday of November always Thanksgiving? I think it is, right? Is it the third or the fourth? I don't know. Anyway, it's the fourth. It's the fourth, I think, because I think the 18th was World Vasectomy Day. Anyway, this year got a lot of play because of the reversal of Roe v. Wade when the Dobbs decision was handed down by the Supreme Court in June. Urologists here in the U.S., they actually reported large numbers of men making appointments to get sterilized shortly after the decision was leaked in May. Men were claiming, oh, we're taking responsibility for our sexuality. We're not going to leave the onus of birth control solely to women. That's what they said. I actually saw a protest. I saw a placard being held by one woman, and she said on her placard that vasectomies save life. I gotta go back and look at it. Vasectomies prevent abortion. That's what it said. Vasectomies prevent abortion. That's how she viewed it. That's how she saw this, right? Meanwhile, you know, you go and take a look at India. Authorities apparently have been setting up sterilization camps for women where they go in, they undergo a procedure called a double puncture. Laparoscopy, where fallopian tubes are tied, and they go home shortly after the procedure. I mean, it's kind of, you're in, you're out, your fallopian tube's tied. It's done laparoscopically. It's bizarre to me. But there was one camp in late August, four women died as a result of the procedure, right? So that's not stopping the authorities from doing it, even though the family planning goals were removed in 1998. A lot of women still feel coerced to get it done. The problem, of course, and here's the bottom line, with such sterilization procedures is that they're permanent, right? I guess vasectomies can be reversed. Maybe we'll talk about that. But really, this is a permanent way to cut off your fertility, to sterilize you. It's easy to cut and tie the tubes. A lot harder to put them back together again. Yet, you know, there are people now seeking after these methods, to have those reversals done. But a lot of people are deliberately crippling perfectly functioning bodily systems just so they can engage in a pleasurable activity without the possibility of the natural consequences of that activity, right? And that's a child getting pregnant. So that's really the heart of this. That's what this is all about. And that has all kinds of consequences, I think, on multiple levels. First, I think honest medical professionals, I think they should tell you that there are side effects to these procedures, right? Not encourage you to do them, but say, hey, here are the side effects. Here are the consequences. Here are the dangers that you may face. Second is fewer people are able to produce children and bear children. We're going to see a decrease in population, and that's not good. It's something I've talked about with you for years. You know, the replacement rate in our country has got to be a 2.1 to keep a stable population. Anything below that, you diminish. There's countries all over the world right now that are paying women to have children. Russia is one of those. Italy is depopulating. You can go through the whole litany of these things. And it has a profound impact on your economy and everything else. But it also has a bearing on our psyches and how we as a society look at our bodies. I'm joined today by a professor of moral theology and ethics at Catholic University of America. His name's John Grabowski. I had the great privilege of being with him a couple weeks ago at an event in Illinois, and I loved his story, and I have tremendous respect for his intelligence and his approach to this. He served three times as a theological advisor to the USCCB in the area of marriage and family, and was even appointed by Pope Benedict XVI as a member of the Pontifical Council for the Family. So if you want to join us, you got a question about sterilization, vasectomies, tubal ligations, feel free to dial in. The number's 888-914-9149. Maybe you're thinking about getting one. Maybe you're worried about the ethics behind this, the morality, where the church teaches. I thought today, in light of World Vasectomy Day, it might be a good idea to take a look at this. One other thing, John's written about seven books, and his latest is called Unraveling Gender, all available at Tan Books, so you can check them out, Tan Publications. Hey, John, good to have you back with us. Good afternoon, Professor.
Drew, always great to be with you. Thanks.
So, Doc, lay out for us the basic Catholic teaching on sterilization and why she teaches this, because this is something that is becoming more and more pervasive in our society today.
Sure. I mean, start with the basic foundational premise that the church understands fertility to be a gift, right? It's a gift given to us by God. It's the capacity to bring new human life in the image of God into the world. St. John Paul II said, every child who comes into the world is a renewal of the mystery of creation. So our fertility is a great gift given to us by God, and yet we want to treat, as you said, this healthy function of the human body, which is at the same time this profound gift, as a disease, something to be suppressed, canceled, either temporarily through contraception or permanently through some form of surgical sterilization. And the church sees this as morally wrong. The term used in classical Catholic moral theology is, this is a form of bodily mutilation.
Yeah.
You are taking a healthy part of the human body and you are damaging it without cause. I mean, the church does make a distinction between direct and indirect sterilization, right? So indirect sterilization is you're trying to treat a pathology, like a man who has testicular cancer, and so he undergoes radiation therapy. That's going to make him sterile. But that's not the purpose or the object of that act. The object of the act is to treat the cancer. Right. And you foresee but don't intend that this is going to make him sterile. So indirect sterilization can be morally OK in the church's view. Direct sterilization, a procedure done for the purpose, like a tubal ligation or a vasectomy, is always wrong in the church's view, because, again, it's mutilation of a healthy body. It's a rejection of one of God's great gifts to us.
Yeah, my guest today, Dr. John Grabowski, and you can join us. I'll go to the phones in just a minute. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We're not just talking vasectomies either. This goes for tubal ligations as well. And, you know, I look at this both personally, what it does to the individual doctor, what it does also to the relationship, what it does in a marriage, how it, in fact, impacts a marriage, but also what happens at society at large. And we could probably talk about all of those things. But let's talk about marriage. A lot of people think this is going to be great. We've had our one boy and our one girl, and we're pretty much done, you know, so we can't have any more kids. We want to go ahead and, you know, have a good life for them and take family vacations and do all of this. You've studied this in depth. I'm curious as to, I know a lot of couples go into it with good intentions. Does it undermine the marriage? Does it impact the relationship on a psychological, emotional, even spiritual level?
I would say, how could it not? Because if you're rejecting, you're rejecting, the person who undergoes the procedure is rejecting part of themselves, part of a healthy part of their own bodies, but something that is deeper than just our biology, right? Because fertility, John Paul II taught, is a dimension, it's part of the deeper dimension of who we are as persons and that capacity we have to be co-creators with God. So when you want to X that out of a relationship, of course, what you're doing is saying, either I'm going to instrumentalize myself or instrumentalize my spouse for this other thing that we perceive as a good. But what you're doing is you're canceling part of the person permanently. And that, so you're not treating the other or yourself as an integral person. So of course that's going to undermine the relationship. And it can be in very practical ways too, because every contraceptive procedure, including surgical sterilization, has a failure rate. Couples who think they have been sterilized through a vasectomy or tubal ligation are sometimes surprised to find themselves pregnant. And then it's, well, I thought you got yourself fixed. Well, I thought I was fixed. And then it becomes a source of contention in the relationship because, and again, it's because they have this anti-life mindset that we want to reject this gift. It is so ironic, Drew. I never knew this, that there was a thing called, what is it, Vasectomy Thursday or World Vasectomy Day. It comes right before Giving Tuesday, right? I mean, isn't that ironic?
Wow. You know, because it's strange.
Go ahead.
Doctor, it's strange that we are in this cultural mindset. I mean, the way God creates things, of course, are for our benefit. And I think of this also societally. I mean, I've no doubt it affects a relationship when one closes the door, when sterility enters into that relationship. It does have an impact. You're not fully giving of yourself in some respects, right, in every aspect of that. But then I think of society as well, and there are countries all over the world. I've talked about depopulation and the problem we're having with replacement rates. What happens to the mindset of the society when we look at the human body as something that we can manipulate for our pleasure, like cutting out a reproductive system? We know the byproduct of that, you know, with a depopulation. But what happens with, you know, I hope I'm phrasing this right, kind of a societal mindset when you cut out, when you're cutting out your reproductive system so you can just experience sexual pleasure without natural consequences. I mean, we're almost worshiping at a false, we're worshiping a God here, a sexual God in some respect. And we're putting that before God's natural law and the way he ordained things. And when you deviate from that, there's always consequences, especially societally.
Absolutely. And again, this feeds into a larger anti-life mentality in our society that we see in a lot of different ways. We certainly see it with abortion. We see it with gender transitioning procedures, which also destroy fertility, right? There's this larger rejection of the gift of our sexuality and its capacity to give life as men or women that we are buying into, and we're doing it to our own harm and to our own detriment, because again, we're rejecting one of God's great gifts. And sometimes it's done because, oh, it's for the greater good, right? We need to care for the environment, so therefore we need to cancel human fertility. But what the church calls us to is what Pope Benedict and now Pope Francis call integral human ecology, right? Where we see, no, human life is a great gift and a great natural resource. And so we can't play off the good of the planet against the good of that gift. We need to treasure both. So we need to be responsible and protect the environment, but not at the cost of rejecting this great God-given capacity that we have to cooperate with the Creator in his plan in bringing life into the world.
Yeah, my guest today, Dr. John Grabowski. As I said, I'll go to the phones in a second. The number here is 888-914-9149. In fact, I'd be really curious to hear if you've had a tubal ligation or if you've had a vasectomy. You can call it anonymously. How has it affected your relationship? Has it? Do you regret it? I had a friend, a girl I knew who had a tubal ligation, doctor, and right after she had it, she got pregnant again with her other son. You know, she didn't expect it to happen. And the husband's like, hey, I thought you had a tubal ligation. But whatever happened, maybe they didn't. Who knows? She got pregnant. I don't know why or how it happened. But, you know, she never regretted having that child. In fact, it's become one of the biggest blessings of her life. And I said to her, I said, what would your life be like without that child? You know, she can't imagine it now. And I think that so often we don't even know, you know, what we are missing. We do not know what's going on. But there are people who are saying, wait a minute, you guys are hypocrites here, you Catholics. You know, you talk about NFP and, you know, you guys contracept in that respect. People may not understand why artificial contraception is such an issue. So maybe we can just do a quick one-on-one, then we'll grab a call or two. The difference between natural family planning, NFP, and then artificial methods of birth control. You know, why does the church accept one and let's say not the other?
St. John Paul II said the difference between the two is it rests on two completely different views of the person, because one sees fertility as a good and as an integral part of the person. Mm-hmm. The other sees it as a disease to be suppressed chemically, mechanically, or surgically. Yeah. So it's a totally different way of viewing the person. It's a totally different way of viewing the gift of our body, the gift of sexuality. Right. And it definitely affects the relationship of the couple, because in the case of the contracepting couple or the couple who has intentionally sterilized themselves, to use another of John Paul II's ways of framing this, the language of the body that is meant to be communicated in conjugal love, mm-hmm, is not spoken in truth, because it's as if, true, the couple is saying, I give myself to you unconditionally, completely, but not my fertility. I accept you unconditionally, completely, but not your fertility. I don't want that. I reject that. So the language of gift is contradicted, yeah, at the deepest level.
I just wonder how that plays out with divorce. Say you get divorced later. Can you get your marriage annulled by saying, hey, the person never truly intended to give themselves to me completely?
It's interesting. If you can demonstrate that a person had no intention to be open to children, yeah, prior to marriage, yeah, yes, that's an invalidating condition. So that would be grounds for an annulment.
What if they were, and then after their fourth, fifth, sixth, however many kids they had, said, okay, I'm now going to do this. Does that change things?
That doesn't invalidate the marriage.
Yeah, okay, there
it's
you go.
It's an unfortunate decision that, yeah, one person makes. But yeah, if the couple entered into open to life, promising to give themselves to each other, yeah, that's a marriage.
Adriana's listening in North Hollywood. Hey, Adriana, thanks for joining us. You're on the air with Dr. John Grabowski.
Hi, I just wanted to comment that 6 years ago, we had our third baby, and I had a very hard pregnancy, and he had Down syndrome, and I was a little older. I'm a breast cancer survivor, so I wasn't regulating, or menstruating regularly, rather. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't do natural family planning, and I didn't realize what I was doing. Mm-hmm. But I did it out of love, in the sense that my heart couldn't take another pregnancy like that.
Right.
You know, I couldn't see another child in the NICU for over 3 months. I just thought, I can't. And some might call it selfish, and it might be, but I just didn't really realize. I've since confessed and understood what I did, but I can't take it back. Right. And I don't think I'm a bad person for it, but I still feel bad, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, you're not a bad person, Adriana. And doctor, let's talk about it. There's a lot of people listening right now who said, Drew, I've had vasectomies, or hey, I've had tubal ligation. I didn't know it at the time, but now that I know it, I do regret it. And I would say to anyone who's been down that path, first and foremost, do exactly what Adriana did. Go to confession, all right? Meet the Lord in the sacrament of mercy. You know,
absolutely.
That's what you have to do first and foremost. And of course, there's always reversals you can think about. But let's address Adriana, because I mean, a lot of people listening to this conversation might really feel guilty or feel bad.
I mean, Drew, I think you have the nail on the head. There's no unforgivable sin, right? There's no, and this certainly is not one of them. So, like any sin that we commit, we bring it to the Lord. He showers us with his mercy, right? When we're burdened with guilt, if that's our conscience, then it's moving us to repentance, and we can bring that to the Lord and the church. If we have already confessed and we still feel guilty, St. Ignatius of Loyola would say that's not from God. That's the evil one trying to weigh us down with guilt. So that's something she might talk to a confessor or a spiritual director about, too, yeah, if she's struggling with ongoing guilt even after having brought it to the Lord in confession. And as you say, reversals, the consensus, I think, of most good Catholic moral theologians is it's not necessarily something a person is obligated to do, because it's another medical procedure which brings its own risks, and it's not always successful. But if a person really believes that, hey, this is something the Lord wants me to try to do, then they should talk to, again, their pastor and a doctor and be fully informed about making a decision in that regard.
It's such a great point. I'm glad you addressed that because, you know, some people say, oh, do I have to get it done? Well, actually, you don't. Age has a lot to do with it. The yep. complications that come with it, you're absolutely right. Daniel is listening in Los Angeles, California. Thanks for tuning in. You're on the air with Dr. Grabowski. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Hi, doctor. Interesting topic you guys are talking about. You know, my wife and I have been kind of discussing our openness to life, and we're practicing NFP. Mm-hmm. We have two, so a boy and a girl, and everyone always kind of gives us the remark of, oh, are you guys done now? And, you know, when we're talking about, you know, potentially being open for, you know, more children, yeah. It seems like it always kind of raises people's eyebrows, like, oh, like, how are you guys going to handle that? Or, and I do have a couple people that I know who have had vasectomies, and I think about it in terms of my relationship with my wife, and I don't think that's something that I could ever do, yeah. Especially since we started practicing NFP and really kind of getting to know the body and how, like, beautiful openness mm-hmm. to life is. You know, I just think it's like with the previous caller, sometimes it's maybe a lack of knowledge on yeah. why people do it, or even selfish yeah. Reasons, like they want to have the act without the consequence.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Well, right.
Jim, first of all, and I'll, John, I'll let you respond to him. Jim, I've had five kids in like, or Daniel, I'm sorry, I had five kids in like 6 years. And I know exactly what happens. I mean, every time we turned around, Kathy and I were pregnant. It was like, oh my gosh, people are like, don't you know how this happens? Well, yeah, we kind of do, I guess. But, you know, every one of those children is a blessing. My grandmother gave me great advice because I was young and I didn't have a whole lot of money. And she says, for every child God gives you, he'll give you a loaf of bread. God's providence is always there. And, you know, you're a witness to people. And Dr. Grabowski, I think what happens when people come up to Daniel and say make comments like that, or to my family or to others who have multiple kids, I think their conscience is almost pricked. I knew one couple who spent their life building their business, became multimillionaires. They only had two children or three. And now, in retrospect, they wish they were open to life. And they actually said that. They said it was the biggest mistake of our life. We put our business and money before we did life. And, of course, your children are your greatest blessings. But I'll let you respond to Daniel and his thoughts.
I would agree with you, Drew. And just on a personal note, my wife and I also have five kids, and that's what the Lord gave us. We yeah. would have loved to have more, but Amen. That's what we got. And, you know, we certainly got our share of comments. It's just part of the deal, living in a contracepting culture where people are just off. Maybe it's their conscience pricking them. Maybe it's just they've kind of drunk deeply at the kind of the wells of anti-life thought in our culture. But no, for a lot of people, it's just instinctual to make comments like that. But, you know, I think it's a when you see a beautiful, loving family that is full of love and life, it is a powerful witness.
Yeah.
And when you see parents who are devoted to helping those children get to heaven, that's an even more powerful witness.
Yeah, amen to that. Hey, doctor, I only have a few minutes left. I definitely want to talk about your book. We've got to get you back to deal with the book, Unraveling Gender. I know it's available at TAN, but two things. One, directions, resources, advice for those who are thinking about, you know, having that ligation, a tubal ligation or the vasectomy, or, you know, just resources where they can go ahead and get information that will help them, you know, make the right decision. And of course, maybe tell us a little bit about your book as well.
Sure. In terms of resources, I mean, I think there is good information out there, but you have to be careful and you have to actually look. There's the USCCB, I know, has some information on their website. The National Catholic Bioethics Center is a great resource here. And we'll have links to studies that will actually maybe aren't going to be talked about in terms of mainstream. There's all I've seen studies that have indicated having one of these sterilizing procedures can take on average about 10 years off of a person's life expectancy because of physiological and psychological problems that tend to follow after. So you want to have all of that data in front of you if you're even thinking about one of these, because otherwise you're not making, even on a secular level, you're not making a decision based on informed consent. In terms of the book, it came out last March. It's available at Tan Books. We can't do any advertising on any of the big tech platforms because every time we try to buy advertising, they reject the ad. So we're kind of swimming against the stream of the culture a little bit there. But again, that's okay. That's if
it's not amazing.
What's the saying? Friendship with God is enmity with the world. So if you're getting pushback, hopefully you're doing something right.
It's pretty amazing. Just because you talk about gender and it goes against the modern, you know, philosophy of the day, which says, hey, gender fluidity, redefining gender, it's all okay. You can't even get a platform. It's unbelievable.
And do whatever you want to your body, because that really connects with the discussion we've been having. Let's erase the body or remake it.
Well, I hope people will check it out. The book is available. I guess just go to Tan Books. You probably, I'm assuming, Amazon or some other place as well. But it's called Unraveling Gender. Okay, Unraveling Gender, written by Dr. John Grabowski. Hey, Doctor, thank you for your time. Always great to talk with you. I appreciate your expertise and your gentle spirit. Great to have you here today.
Drew, thanks so much for having me.
All right. That's John Grabowski. Say a prayer for him. Anthony in Illinois says, this guest is amazing. I'm the father of five daughters. They're being told by doctors that it's okay to have birth control. He says, but what you're saying is so true. Trying to bring truth to you. When I return, I got another look. Check this one out. How about in vitro fertilization? Maybe you're saying, well, you know, we're having problems getting pregnant. We're not anti-life. We're not trying to sterilize ourselves. We're not trying to have tubal ligations or vasectomies. We want to have kids. So you know what? We're going to go ahead and use IVF. What are the moral concerns with that? We'll dive into that. If you're going down this pathway or you know somebody else who's done this, you may want to stay tuned. We're back in just a minute. Don't go away.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
These embryos were frozen, suspended in time at nearly 200 degrees below zero, waiting patiently at the National Embryo Donation Center in Knoxville, Tennessee. That is until just a few weeks ago, when twins Timothy and Lydia were born to Rachel and Philip Ridgway of Oregon.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, you want to hear a crazy story? Twins from frozen embryos from 30 years ago. 30 years you were frozen. A set of twins just born. I would probably argue this is the longest frozen embryo ever to result in a live birth. And it's an amazing story. We just talked to Dr. John Grabowski about the church's teaching on sterility and contraception. You know, just a couple of days ago or last week, they had National Vasectomy Day, right? It's where the culture is. We live in this mindset, this spirit of death, right? And sterility. On the other hand of the spectrum, and I've got a friend, he has tried to, two friends actually that were considering in vitro. One guy, very successful man. He was a Hollywood producer. And he married a young girl. She was probably 16 years younger than him. That baby was part of the problem, right? And goes to med school, and she gets her degree. It becomes a very successful surgeon, and it's making bank, right? And they decide they want to have kids. But he's now in his, you know, mid-50s or something like that, and she's 30-something. She went through all the post-grad stuff and all the residencies and all the starting of business. Now she wants to have kids. They can't have them. So she wants to do in vitro. And he says, I can't do it. It's not moral. I cannot do in vitro fertilization. And next thing you know, she's cheating on him, and they're divorced. You know, so what a horror story. But this man, I have a lot of respect for, because I really believe he sacrificed his marriage and something that he loved for what was moral and what was right. We got another friend who I think just has health issues in general, is trying to have a child. They're adopting frozen embryos and going through the process. So, you know, we heard this story, right? The other side of the spectrum, really. CNN reported on this couple who, there's these two children born after having been conceived in an in vitro fertilization lab back in April of 1992. April of 1992. They were put in this cryogenic storage, as you heard the report, 200 degrees below zero. 200 degrees below zero. Until about 10 months ago, when a couple from Oregon said, hey, we want to do what's called embryo adoption. And the embryos were first made for an anonymous married couple where the husband was, I guess, in his early 50s too. But instead of using eggs from the wife, they used some from a 34-year-old egg donor. And then they were put on ice. And according to another report that I'd read about 3 years ago, no one knows for sure how the embryos are in storage, because no one is required to report that. But there are estimates that up to 1.4 million embryos are in storage in the U.S. right now. 1.4 million embryos. And they say that researchers link 5 to 7% have been abandoned. 5 to 7%. Though it's as high as 18% in some clinics. And that was 3 years ago. Imagine where those numbers are right now. I had this conversation with somebody yesterday. They said, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, oh, I'm going to do this show on in vitro fertilization. And somebody says, what happens to the souls? You know, do those fertilized, those embryos have a soul? Yeah, they have a soul. But you got to think of what happened if something ever happened where power failed, right? Or something happened where millions of these embryos were destroyed. I mean, it'd be pretty tragic. But there are Catholics who think that this is an acceptable way to make children. After all, they're, you know, do we want more children, people say, right? If you look at what Pope St. Paul VI taught in Humanae Vitae, you begin to see the wisdom of keeping what he called the procreative and unitive acts of married life, of married love together. And that's really what this should all be about. When you separate them, what do you get? You get all sorts of problems. Like you heard in the conversation we had on sterilization, you heard about the stats about these embryos being created and put in storage and abandoned. There's all types of legal issues that arise that are beyond belief. So today I've invited Dr. Kevin Miller, who's a moral theologian at Franciscan University of Steubenville, to stop by and to give us some perspective on this. He's a longtime member of the board of directors of the university Faculty for Life, and it's good to have him here to tap into his expertise. You might have a question, you might have a comment, you might want to do in vitro, you might want to adopt an embryo. Good time to get your questions answered. Good to have you back, Doctor. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thanks. Always good to be with you on the show.
Yeah, it certainly is. Our number here, if you want to get in, 888-914-9149. Maggie was saying, what about those souls? She was saying to me, you know, it just did my headset. So, you know, we've got all these embryos that are frozen. Speak to that. I never really thought about that question. You know, you have a human soul here. What is the state of that soul? And, you know, maybe you can go ahead and, you know, unpack that for some.
Sure. I mean, these are embryonic human beings. I think sometimes when we talk about an embryo or a fetus, we unintentionally elude that reality. Right. Obviously, when we talk about an infant or an adolescent, let's say, we're not doing that, whether intentionally or unintentionally. But sometimes the way we use words like embryo and fetus, we're kind of skipping over that reality, right, which is why I like to say embryonic human being, just to make that point. And they have souls. They, being living human beings, they have rational souls, just as you or I do. And while they are kept bodily frozen, while they're kept bodily in a state that precludes, as long as they are frozen, further growth and development, they still have those souls. Just as I guess the closest analogy would be if you were or I were in a coma.
Yeah.
It's something like that. And just as if you or I were in a coma for a while and then died, the soul would be separated from the body.
Right.
Same thing here. The soul would be separated from the body. The church teaches that when a baby, this is a common English term for even an unborn child. This is a very, very, very small baby at a very, very, very early stage of development, but it is a baby. The church teaches that when a baby dies unbaptized, we essentially don't know that baby's fate. It simply hasn't been revealed to us. Obviously, for a long time, the limbo hypothesis was very popular. In recent decades, more than a few decades, theologians have tended to call that into question and to hypothesize that in God's mercy, we can hope, we can't know, but we can hope that such babies are received by the merciful Father into heaven. But we just don't know one way or the other. But whatever the case would be for, let's say, a baby who is stillborn and unbaptized, same thing would be the case with the souls. And then at the time of the general resurrection, the bodies also of these embryonic human beings.
Right. So let's do this, Doctor, too. I'm going to open the phones. We only have a few minutes with Dr. Kevin Miller. If you want to join us, it's 888-914-9149. Before we go to break, let's just do a 101 for everyone. I gave two scenarios. A friend whose wife wanted to take the sperm and the egg and create these embryos. He didn't want to do that because, it was not a unitive act. I got this other friend who's health issues, and he's going to adopt an embryo. Let's talk about the morality. Maybe I'll take a break now. When we come back, let's do that. Let's explain in vitro fertilization, why it's immoral. Is it moral to adopt? And we'll answer a few calls, too, from you if you want to get in. 888-914-9149. Our conversation continues with more right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show.
Connected.
Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's good to be with you today. Hey, if you're just joining us, we are looking at a strange story. Parents welcoming twins from embryos that have been frozen 30 years ago through the process of in vitro fertilization. And I thought, look, it's such a great topic to talk about to get people better understanding this. More and more couples are saying, hey, I can't have a child. I want to have my own, genetics. And, we have to, we're going to go this route, adoption is always an option. I often think that God is the author of life and he'll give it if it's intended to be. And sometimes going down these pathways can be morally very problematic. And I've invited to join me today, Kevin Miller, Dr. Kevin Miller. He joins us today, of course, from Franciscan University of Steubenville. He's a moral theologian there. And let's pick up on this aspect. I gave you those two scenarios, as I said. One guy who had everything and he lost his wife because he would not do in vitro fertilization because he saw the immorality of it. And another guy who's now adopting embryos. Could you walk us through what is what's ethical and what's not?
Okay, sure. So the church teaches that in vitro fertilization is intrinsically evil. Those are the exact words that the church uses, as are, of course, a great many other acts like, abortion, for example, or euthanasia. And intrinsically evil means that the act itself is evil, regardless of further intention regardless of why you want to do it, and also regardless of circumstances. So you can have the best reason in the world for wanting to have a child by means of IVF. You can have the most appropriate, I guess I'd say, circumstances in which to wish to use IVF. Doesn't matter. The act itself is evil. And if the act itself is evil, then the action taken as a whole is evil. Because for any action of any kind, the act itself, the intention, and the circumstances all have to be good for the action as a whole to be good. So that's the clear teaching of the church. Now, why? Well, I could give a half-hour lecture on that point, and I do, in fact, in one of the classes I teach. But to boil it down a lot, it is the church's view that there's a kind of mutual exploitation by the husband and wife when they use these kinds of reproductive technologies, whether IVF or other, you know, kind of variations on that theme. In essence, rather than loving each other with the hope that there will result a child, the conception of a child, instead they're using each other as kind of instruments for the generation of a child. And whenever people use each other as means to some end, then as Carl Wojtyla put it in his book Love and Responsibility back in 1960, the future Saint John Paul II, that's a kind of mutual exploitation. It doesn't matter whether they both agree to it. Objectively, that's what it is. Okay. Secondly, there's also a kind of exercise of dominion over the child that they hope to conceive, rather than the child being treated as equal in dignity as a fellow human being. The child is being treated as a product, being produced, therefore a product. And that's a kind of insult to the dignity of the child. So the couple are doing something that is an attack on each other's human dignity, and they're likewise doing something that constitutes an attack on the human dignity of the child that they both hope to have. So can't do it. Intrinsically evil, you can't do it. Now, the question of what to do once IVF has already been performed and has produced extra embryos, which are now in frozen storage, is a thornier one. The church's most recent magisterial document on this topic, Dignitas Humanae, in the early 2000s, I'm not remembering the exact year for some reason, clearly rules out, it repeats the church's ruling out of IVF and the like as intrinsically evil. It doesn't clearly teach that embryo adoption is intrinsically evil. It raises really strong prudential cautions about embryo adoption. And I don't have time to go into the details, but it doesn't actually use the language of intrinsically evil. And that language is, you know, is there for the church to use in magisterial teachings. The church uses it again in that same document regarding other things. So I think it's fair to say that theologians and others are free to engage in theological speculation about the moral goodness or evil of embryo adoption, and to, you know, kind of come to their own conclusions, bearing in mind that in any case there are prudential cautions that absolutely need to be taken into account.
All right. Doctor, let's move along. We only have a few more moments here. Ernest is, or who's up next? Malcolm. Malcolm in Salt Lake City, Utah. Hi, Malcolm. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah, my question has to do with the since the embryo is not designed to be frozen, okay, what types of neurological defects could we possibly see in an adult human being who started out in that fashion?
All right, doctor, you want to handle that?
To my knowledge, these babies are generally quite healthy, generally free of any kinds of unusual defects. To my knowledge, there may be some issues that have been discovered that I am not aware of. But these are embryos that are frozen at a very, very, very early stage of development before any kinds of specialized cells, let alone cell tissues or organs, have begun to develop. So it would seem unlikely that, for example, the nervous system would be, or for that matter, the heart, or you know, any other special type of tissue or organ system, would be affected during the subsequent growth or development of the baby once the embryo has been thawed and placed in a woman's womb.
Yeah. All right. And thank you, Malcolm, for the call. Ernest is on deck. He's listening to us in Dodge County, Wisconsin. Hi, Ernest.
Hello.
Hi, Ernest. Go right ahead.
I've worked with prize dairy cattle for about the last 50 years. Embryo transfer has been part of that business for about 40 years.
Right.
You get to a certain stage in an auction, they'll quit selling mature females and young stock, and they'll say, now we're going to sell frozen embryos, and they will often bring as much or more than a live young dairy cow. They mate an outstanding female with an outstanding male, and then the person that buys it can put that into an inferior animal and get a prize animal back. It's quite costly, but it's been part of our business for about 40 years.
I see. Well, thank you, Ernest. I appreciate that. Doctor, any thoughts?
Not really. I guess I've known for a while that this was a part of animal husbandry with some kinds of animals. I've heard you don't do it with horses. I've never been able to find out why. Obviously with animals, you can engage in forms of manipulation that would be totally wrong to engage in with human beings.
Yeah. Well, Doctor, I want to thank you for your time. I only have about a minute left. If people want more information on the ethics of in vitro fertilization, where the lines have to be drawn, what would you recommend?
I would certainly recommend reading, as I said, the main church document on this topic, Dignitas Humanae, or if you just want a kind of quick snapshot of the church's teaching specifically on that topic, read the catechism, read the section on the sixth commandment in the catechism, which gives you just a few paragraphs that nicely encapsulate what the church has to say about this.
Sounds great. Doctor, I appreciate your time as always. Keep up your great work, okay? We'll talk again soon.
Thanks. I appreciate your having me.
Yeah, it's Dr. Kevin Miller. He's a moral theologian, Franciscan University, Steubenville, a longtime member of the board of directors of the University Faculty for Life. I'm out of time for the day. I want to thank you for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. It is just a delight to be here with you. Tomorrow, I hope you'll join me. We're going to take a different look. Some other issues. One of the things is true crime. You know, there has been a fascination right now with this brutal murder in Idaho. And it seems that America, for some reason, has a fascination with, crime investigations and murder. And we'll dive into that tomorrow. We'll take a look at it. Joe Socorro will be stopping by and a lot of other great things. We'll pray the chaplet. So be sure and join me until our paths again cross. I'll offer prayers for you tonight. Please pray for me. Have a great night, everyone.